It's good to be back. We were gone for 2 weeks. It seems like a long time. We went to Indiana for Jolene's cousin's wedding, and then last weekend we were camping. So it's good to be back here this morning. This morning we know that today is Father's Day, and to many in society, fathers have become the butt of jokes. If you watch any television shows, for the most part, fathers are bumbling idiots. Fathers are, they do stupid stuff. They don't know what's going on. The mothers are the ones who are in charge, who do most things. And the fathers are there to do stupid stuff and say funny things. I don't think this is by accident. I think it is on purpose. I think it is Hollywood's goal to break up the family, to discredit the father, because Hollywood is run by the world, and it is the world's goal to break us down and to destroy families and to destroy homes. So, I have some statistics about fatherless homes, and these are several years old already, so they may be even more out of whack. 85% of youth who are currently in prison grew up in fatherless homes. 85%. 39% of students in the United States from the first grade to their senior year of high school do not have a father at home. Children without a father are 4 times more likely to be living in poverty than children with a father. 4 times more likely. I know that we don't like to think we live in a sheltered world, but we live in a sheltered world. The Anabaptist way of life that we live in, it's not perfect. And it's not to say that this can't happen in the Anabaptist circles, because it does. But I'll grant you that not 39% of our students from this church do not have a father in their homes. I'm thankful for the way that we were raised. Children from fatherless homes are twice as likely to drop out of school before graduating than children who have father in their lives. 24.7 million children in the United States live in a home where their biological father is not present. That equates to 1 in every 3 children in the United States not having access to their father. 1 in 3. And we wonder why the prisons are full of fatherless children. Girls who live in a fatherless home have 100% higher risk of suffering from obesity than girls who have their father present. Teen girls from fatherless homes are also 4 times more likely to become mothers before the age of 20, repeating that cycle over and over, making it worse. 57% of the fatherless homes in the United States involve African-American, black households. Hispanic households have a 31% fatherless rate, while Caucasian white households have a 20% fatherless rate. In 2011, 44% of children in homes headed by a single mother were living in poverty. Just 12% of children in married couple families were living in poverty. 32% difference if you're married. Another statistic that goes right along with that, that I'll go ahead and read, is the median income for a household with a single mother is $35,400 a year. The median income for a home with a married couple raising their children is $85,300 in the United States. That's $50,000 a year difference. Children who live in a single-parent home are more than 2 times more likely to commit suicide than children in a two-parent home. 72% of Americans believe that a fatherless home is the most significant social problem and family problem that is facing their country. Very true. Should be more like 100%. Should believe that. Only 68% of children will spend their entire childhood with an intact family. How many of us have spent our entire childhood with an intact family? 75% of rapists are motivated by displaced anger that is associated with feelings of abandonment that involves their father. Living in a fatherless home is a contributing factor to substance abuse, with children from such homes accounting for 75% of adolescent patients being treated in substance abuse centers. So you're much more likely to be involved in alcohol and drugs. 85% of all children which exhibit some type of behavioral disorder come from a fatherless home. 90% of the youth in the United States who decide to run away from home or become homeless for any reason originally come from a fatherless home. 90%. 63% of youth suicides involve a child who was living in a fatherless home when they made their final decision. Children who live in a single-parent or step-family home report less schoolwork monitoring, less social supervision, and lower educational expectations than children who come from two-parent homes. Even when poverty levels are equal, children who come from two-parent homes outperform children who come from one-parent home. About 40% of children in the United States are born to mothers who are not married. 40%. Over 60% of these children were born to mothers who were under the age of 30. 25% of children under the age of 18 are currently being raised without the presence of a father. 25% don't have a father in their house. Over 30% of fatherless homes are classified as being food insecure. 30% of fatherless homes don't have enough food. Children who live in a fatherless home are 279% more likely to deal drugs or carry firearms for offensive purposes compared to children who live with their fathers. And the last one I'll read is pregnant women who do not have the support of the father experience pregnancy loss at 48% rate. When the father is present, the prevalence of pregnancy falls to 22%. Fathers are very important. Just the mere presence of a father makes a huge difference, much less one that's involved, one that's in his family's life. This morning I've titled my message, The Big Picture. Because what is the big picture? What is the big picture for your life? So many people live from day to day, just trying to survive, trying to get along. But what is the big picture? Do we have a 10-year goal for our family? Do we have a 20-year goal for our family? So that's what I've titled it this morning. I've got some verses here that I'm going just to read. I'm not going to turn to them because I've got them written out, and it's just verses out of Proverbs that oftentimes you hear on a Father's Day. Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Proverbs 20, verse 7 is on your bulletin. It says, "A righteous man walks in his integrity. His children are blessed after him." Proverbs 23, verse 24 says, "The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. And he who begets a wise child, will delight in him." A little different there between wise and wild. Proverbs 13, 22 says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous." And I don't know whether this is talking about financial wealth and inheritance, But there's much more to pass on to our children as inheritance than wealth. I was listening to Sunday in the South this morning, and the song was singing, and he was talking about his dad who worked to fix cars to make a living, and his dad had to work lots of hours to pay for, just to keep everybody in shoes, and Mama would read the Bible to them at night, and they didn't have a whole lot. But at the end, he said, I guess we were the rich kids after all. So much more than money. As adults, we want to give our children everything that we can. We want them to grow up and have everything that they want. But that's not always what they need. Proverbs 29:17 says, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. And then Ephesians 6:4, a very familiar one, it says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And then Proverbs 22:1 says, a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. As Kevin was saying about that last song we sang, we want God more than silver and gold. And as I read this verse, I had to think of what does that mean? What does that verse mean? A good name is more desirable than great riches. We all want to be rich. And how many people out there, maybe, I know my family knows who he is, but who knows who Marcel Ozuna is? Bodie, who's Marcel Ozuna? He plays for the Braves. Signed a contract this last year, 4 years, $65 million. He's making $16 million this year. He's got great riches. But you know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have a good name. In fact, he's not even playing baseball right now. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, he got released from prison, from jail, because he beat his wife. How's that going for him? You can't buy a good name with all that money he's got. He can't buy a good name. You think of somebody like Tim Tebow. I'm sure he's got plenty of money. But he's been not run out of football. I think he's actually trying to make it back into football. He's lived his life in the spotlight. And he seems to have a good name. So a good name is more desirable than great riches. You can't buy a good name. So as I was thinking this week, a verse came to my mind, and it's 3 John. I'm going to read chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. It says, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, behold, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. And then verse 4 is the one that came to my mind. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. As fathers, as a father, that is my greatest desire, is that my children walk in truth. My children, and I tell them this, and I have a son who thinks it'd be great to be an athlete. He wants to play football and baseball and soccer and basketball. And growing up, as a child, I can remember being that too. We want to be the star. We want to hit that shot at the end of the game. We want to score that touchdown. Who am I kidding? Even today, if you're playing golf or whatever it is, you want to win. But as a child, you want to you you think about those things and you want to, that, how great would that be to be able to play golf for a living, you know? Or be able to play baseball or football. That, you're playing a game for a living. Be a race car driver. At least then you wouldn't have to work out. Maybe in football or baseball you have to work out, keep in shape. But in racing, you just get in the car and drive. Race car driver would probably tell me I'm wrong. But how great would that be and make millions of dollars? And I'm not saying you can't do those things and be a Christian. You can't do those things and walk in truth, but I bet you the percentage of those players, those athletes who were involved in that, I bet you the percentage of them is less than 10%. So I tell them all the time that, you know what? That's great. But I would much rather you be a Christian and you be in church on Sunday morning. I'd much rather you raise a family and walk in truth. So that is my desire, that they walk in truth. But how are they going to get to that point? What is our job as fathers? What are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to make them? Because they're going to become whatever we turn them into. Whatever we train them to be is what they're going to become. And they're going to follow after us. Deuteronomy 6, verses 5 to 9 says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." We are to teach our children. And that's one thing. I think I've said something before about this. That's one thing as being a father, being a mother. You don't get a day off. It's 24/7, 365. You don't get to say, you know what, today I'm not going to be a parent. Today is Saturday, it's my day off. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. It's not like that. It's every day. It says, "You shall teach them diligently. You shall talk with them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you're driving in your car, when you lie down, when you rise up. Every day, all day. Can't let your guard down." 2 Corinthians 3, verses 2 to 3. Says, "You are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read by all men. Clearly, you are an epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but by the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of flesh, that is of the heart." We are what our children are going to see. They're going to do what we do. We are the epistle of Christ to our children as fathers, not only to our children but to those around us, those who see us, but most of all to us as fathers. It says clearly, "You're an epistle of Christ, written not with ink, ministered by us, written not with ink but by the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone but on tablets of flesh, that is of the heart." Our kids are watching us. They see what we do, why we do it, and they're going to respond just like we do. So how are we raising them? I came across a story. It says, "One evening, an elderly Cherokee brave told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside of people. 'My dear one, the battle between two wolves is inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. That's the evil one, the evil wolf. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. As human beings, we have the human nature in us. And it's so much easier to let our human nature and our selfish pride and our anger and our jealousy get the best of us and to give in to them. Said the grandson thought about it for a moment and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee replied, "The one you feed." Which one are you feeding? It's up to us as fathers to feed in our own lives the one that has joy, peace, love, hope. Philippians 4, 8 and 9 says, I'll turn to it here. I have it written down, but let me turn to it. It says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are noble, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." So these things that are true, are noble, just, pure, lovely, of good report, they're virtuous, and are praiseworthy. We're supposed to think on these things. And then he says, "The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me." So we've seen, these people have seen Paul doing these things. He says, "These do. And the God of peace will be with you." So now he gives them, it's easy to think on those things. But now he wants them to put it into action. So if you change that into do, it says, finally, brethren, do what is true. Do what is noble. Do what is just. Do what is pure. Do what is lovely. Do what is of good report. Do what is virtuous. And do things that are praiseworthy. Not just meditate on them. We are to do them. We are to feed these things in our lives. As dads, if we feed these things in our lives, our children will in turn see that we're doing. We are the epistle. We are the written word that they see, living out day by day. As I thought about this, I thought about as men, we no longer have the opportunity, the privilege to do whatever we want to do. When we become married, when we die to self. The Bible talks about it. I'm going to go to that. But we're not here to serve ourselves anymore. We're here to serve our wives, just as Christ served the church. And I came across a story this week of a baseball player. His name is Justin Smoke. Most people wouldn't know him. He played for the Gamecocks and went on to play Major League Baseball for several years. And this last year, he didn't get signed by a Major League Baseball team, but he got signed by a Japanese team. I don't know the amount of money he was making, but it's probably in the millions of dollars to play baseball in Japan. Lots of players that don't make it to the majors or don't stay in the majors for one reason or another, they go to Japan and play, and they make money. But his wife posted this on social media the other day, and there was a video that went with it. And it says, "So Justin made a terribly tough decision. It started to become obvious that we were not going to be able to get to Japan anytime soon, if ever. So with support and understanding from the team, he decided to come home." And there's a video of him. And I don't think his daughters knew he was coming home. There was a video of him. Coming through the door, and his daughters were excited to see him. She said, "This is why. He made that sacrifice." And I don't know his life. I don't know if he's a Christian. But he's living a servant's life. To serve his family. To come home. To be there for his family. Because his family means more to him than $1 million. What does our family mean to us? Mark 10, 45. Talks about Christ and what he came for. It says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." And then Ephesians 5, 22 to 29. And I wasn't planning on getting into this, but as I read on, I had to. It says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is head of the wife, and as also Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their husbands, to their own husbands in everything." And then it says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." I just read in Mark where it says that he did not come to be served, but to serve. We're to love our wives as Christ loved the church. He died for the church. And that's not something that's easy. And that's something that I struggle with a lot. And my wife will tell you that. But it says, "Husbands, love your wife, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hates his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church." Fathers, we have responsibility. Husbands, we have responsibility to love our wives, to love our children, as we love ourselves. And I know it doesn't say that to love children as you love yourself. But I think when you fall into that pattern of loving your wife, I think it does a great thing for your children to see that. To make her the queen of your house. To make her who she ought to be. Skip down to verse 33. It says, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." And as I thought about these things, it's a big thing to live up to. And as you become older, you don't get less responsibility. Wesley, how many grandchildren do you have? Do you know? 13. So now your responsibility, you not only have 5 children you have to be an example to, but now you've got 13 grandchildren that you have to be an example to. So as we live our lives, it doesn't get easier. But we know that we have to do what is best. And as I thought about this, you know, what is the big picture? I thought of Hebrews 11, where it talks about the heroes of faith. We talked about Noah, who built an ark. For 100 years, he built this ark without seeing anything. And, you know, maybe we don't see our children. Maybe we don't get that privilege to live to see our children grow old or whatever it is. But we have to lay that groundwork. Abraham, God promised him that he was going to be a father at the age of 75. It took 25 more years. These two men were looking for the big picture, and they weren't perfect. There's people in there that are mentioned in there. David is mentioned in there, and Moses is mentioned in there. They committed murder, and yet they're men of faith, great men of faith. So to us as fathers, it's okay to mess up. It's okay when we screw up and we do something wrong. But we have to get back up. We can't continue in that. We have to get back up and we have to keep trying again. We have to remember the big picture. We have to remember that verse 4 of 3 John, verse chapter 1. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. To me, that should be our final goal, our big picture, what we're living our lives for, why we do what we do. And maybe like Kevin said this morning in the Sunday school lesson, we do things a peculiar way, and we do things differently than other people do things. But in the end, our final goal is that our children walk in faith. And maybe that's why we do things in a peculiar way. Maybe that's why we're peculiar in what we do, so that our children can walk in truth. This is all I have. Why don't we bow our heads for prayer, and then after that we will distribute some goodies. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for another day. Father, I thank you that we can celebrate fathers and what they mean to the family, what they mean to the church. Father, I pray that you would just be with us this week. Father, I pray that you would be with those who are traveling. Father, I pray that you would keep them safe and grant them traveling mercies as they come home. Father, I pray that you would be with each one of us as fathers as we go out this week and we go to our jobs, go to our business, whatever it is, and as we work to provide for our families. Father, I pray you be with us as we come home and spend time with our children. Father, I pray that you would help us to make the effort to spend quality time, to be a part of their lives and to be in their lives. Father, I pray that you would just lead us and guide us as fathers and help us to look to you for guidance, to try to do what is best for our families, to reach that ultimate goal of having our children walk in truth. Father, I pray that you would just be with each one of us as we go from here today. Father, I pray that you give us all safety and bring us back together again Wednesday night. In your name I pray. Amen.